Welcome to the Global Venturing Review podcast. My name is James Mawson, founder and editor-in-chief of our Global Corporate Venturing, Global University Venturing and Global Impact Venturing publications. Great pleasure to be back on this hot sunny day with Thierry Hellis. Welcome, Thierry.
Hello, Jim. You say hot sunny day. It's actually quite cold here.
Oh, really? Well, we're not that far apart, are we?
Yeah.
It's the other side of Welsh-English border. And yeah, it's absolutely scorching here. So it feels like we're going to have cold weather coming our way, I expect.
Well, yeah, if it's coming from here, because we had the 32 degrees yesterday. So yeah, you might get the cold tomorrow.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's something to look forward to for the weekend. So yeah, very pleasant. Cool. Well, hopefully on more positive news, what's been happening in the past week? What's been the highlights that's caught your eye?
Well, there is a true IPO bonanza going on at the moment, and we'll get to that in a moment. But there's still a good deal of money sloshing around the sector for early stage deals too. Sana Biotechnology is working on a string of drug candidates utilizing stem cell technology and has raised a huge $700 million for its first round. Participants include GV, whose diversification into life sciences has so far been very successful, of course. The unit's exits including Iperion, Edisys Medicine, and Flatiron Health. Sana is actually a spin-out, having been developed by researchers at Harvard Medical School, University of Washington School of Medicine at UC San Francisco, in partnership with a team at incubator Flagship Pioneering.
Well, I can see why you picked this one first, Jerry. $700 million for a first funded round? It's SoftBank's not involved. What's happening to the world? I don't know what to say about this one particularly. It's obviously they've got something which, if they can make it work in terms of stem cell technology, could be fairly transformational for some fairly big diseases, you would imagine. And given stem cells, you know, the big ones, you know, that people spend a lot of time thinking around to dementia, sort of Alzheimer's types, and sort of diabetes types, and cancer being obviously the big one. So my estimate would be they're working on a string of drug candidates, and I reckon they've got some of the large sort of cancer issues that people face firmly in their sights. Now, it could be even more exciting now if it's to do with the brain, and stem cell can obviously be applicable to any of the cells, I suppose. So could be in that area, which I think would be very remarkable. But they've got something up their sleeve, you would imagine, and giving GV sort of eye for a good deal. That I think this could be an interesting one. Actually, we're seeing a lot more of the sort of other tech companies trying to follow a Google Alphabet's lead in terms of healthcare and making more of a move. It to probably 10 years or so ago, you know, anything healthcare related was done by the big pharma companies in the whole and biotech ones. And now it's there's definitely a lot more doing as a sort of Indonesia's state bank or BRI, their corporate venture fund, is sort of dabbling in sort of healthcare telemedicine deals. So I think the sort of writing's on the wall for this sector. I think a lot of people are sort of have it firmly in sight to push aside some of the big biotechs.
You weren't actually too far off with your guess. Well, at least Sana, they claim. I haven't seen their pitch deck, obviously. But they claim to be working on, they claim to be targeting cancer, central nervous conditions, heart disease, and several genetic disorders. Yeah, quite a broad range. Obviously, it's, yeah.
Oh, good. Well, wish him luck. I'm reaching the age where I might be one of their clients soon enough.
Hopefully you're not getting too close yet. You're only in your 40s, but yeah, I mean, it's even as someone in his 30s, it's quite nice to know that, or hope that by the time I do need it will hopefully exist. So yeah,
just affording it's going to be the other question. Cool. What next?
Well, Amazon formed its Alexa Fund 5 years ago, but in recent times has made some hefty investments off its balance sheet, not least in the transport sector, where it has backed huge rounds for the likes of Rivian and Aurora Innovation. The corporate has now followed that by committing $2 billion to a vehicle called the Climate Pledge Fund, which will invest in developers of products or services that can accelerate carbon reduction. Sectors in its eye line include renewable energy, transport, logistics, manufacturing and materials, as well as food and agriculture.
Yeah, big old funded announcement this, isn't it? You can see Amazon's had a good coronavirus, can't you? Crisis in terms of sort of sales being up and throwing off cash. It does not know what to do with it all, does it really? But obviously, you know, in many ways, it's a good thing. We obviously all want the world to be a little bit more, lower in temperature. Certainly today, I feel that more than most times. But really interesting. And obviously, a day after this sort of announcement, they've just announced an acquisition of Zoox, which is a sort of an autonomous driving deal. So I don't think they'll be under their climate pledge fund, given it's a 1.2 odd billion deal. But the fact that they've done this, obviously they've invested in the electric vehicle maker Rivian, and said that they would buy 100,000 of those vehicles. So they're trying to join up this sort of, how do they deliver stuff to people in a sort of fundamentally lower cost way? Zoox could potentially save them somewhere in the thick end of $20 billion of costs if they can get autonomous driving working, just because they'll need fewer people to deliver the products. You then have a drone which takes it from the van to the doorstep. If it's electric vehicle, because if it's Rivian, then, its sort of carbon footprint is low, and obviously it can be recharged overnight, or they could do it in segregation. So it's quite smart. It's very join up. It's very long term, customer centric, all good things that you would expect from Jeff Bezos and Amazon. And the thing which I think probably, if I had half a guess to why it's $2 billion for the climate pledge fund, is because the other Seattle, Washington State behemoth is Microsoft. And Microsoft, a couple of months ago, announced a $1 billion climate innovation fund. So the fact that Jeff can then go, when they meet up at the sort of Breakthrough Energy Ventures board meetings, and say, you only put in $1 billion, Microsoft, we've just done $2 billion. I'm sure had nothing to do with it.
I mean, if we're getting more money put into clean tech and saving the environment because CEOs have to show off to each other, that's one corporate thing I can get behind.
I know. Sadly, there is a little bit of... this might be inappropriate. Actually, I best not go there, actually, given what happened to Jeff Bezos' phone hack. But...
What
was the next story, Tio?
Well, the IPO market, as I said, is very active at the moment, particularly in the life sciences sector, and that may explain why Invitae has splashed out to purchase precision oncology technology provider Archer DX. Which was founded by QIAGEN in 2015, Archer DX had actually filed to go public earlier this month, but Invitae has stepped in to agree a cash and shares acquisition deal valued at $1.4 billion. That's past tense, as the $30 million Invitae shares included in the deal subsequently shot up by more than 40% in price on the public markets.
Yeah, fascinating. Yeah, obviously a great exit for the sort of shareholders behind Archer DX. But, the fact that, that it effectively people are valuing Invitae, so much more from buying this as a sort of precision oncology. And bear in mind, this is, 5-year-old company? So, it's got probably not a lot of proof points at this stage as to whether this technology actually will work. Just points a little bit, I think, to some of the craziness that's happening in the sort of the public markets right now. I mean, it is, the what's called YOLO, you only lose once, type mentality is sort of doing the rounds, but it is the sort of thing that's probably a little bit crazy. You spend $1.4 billion in cash and shares on a potential target that may or may not work, fundamentally. Not that I know anything about Archer DX in terms of the actual sort of science behind it in terms of whether it will work, but it's still unproven. That's my key point. And the issue is they're then bidding up the buyer, even though there's a sort of winner's curse on these types of deals, and they're putting up by more than value. It's just, I think somewhere in the sort of random walk down Wall Street, people took a left turn, went into the pub, had a few too many drinks, and then came out, sat in the sun for too long, and then decided to buy more shares.
I like that image. It's terrifying as it might be, just those deals being made in a pub. To be fair, it can cost $1 billion just to develop one drug. So having a company that, is, even if it is only 5 years old, there is a decent amount of research done already that Invitae hasn't had to do internally. So 1.4 billion may still be a good deal. Because they didn't have to spend that internally, which they might very well might have done on one drug rather than getting a platform for it. It might still turn out to be worthless, but so might the $1 billion you spent internally.
No, it's a good point, Jerry. I mean, like you say, I mean, the key is it's a bit of a punt. And so you've obviously got to hope the Invitae, smart group, senior management, obviously know ArcherDX, putting a bit of a punt down. But it's the fact that the underlying shareholders in Invitae are trying to second guess management and this deal to say, oh, it's worth even more. It's likely to be even more helpful to the company than what they paid, to be able to sort of say this is going to be more valuable to Invitae. It might well be, some very smart people might be, sort of underlying investors in Invitae, but you just, part of your instincts do go, for a very large amount of money that they've underpriced this deal, 1.4 billion, and it's going to be worth multiples of that. Yeah, might be. But at the announcement of the deal to say that it is, it's a punchy call by some of these investors, and it wouldn't surprise me, looking at it, that this is YOLO going on, that people just think, well, to go more, get a bit of momentum, give it a play, have a bit of fun, see if it does work out. I don't know. I mean, certainly 20 years ago, when I was looking more at some of the hedge funds and private equity deals, there were some really smart merger arbitrage folks who could really look through these types of deals and say, there's some good news that's going to come out and all the rest of it. But now, if it's more retail-based, it's just a punt. And I don't necessarily think there's a lot of traction. But like I said, I haven't looked at the shareholder base for Invitae. If it's the smart merger arbs and they've really... Then fair enough. But, it feels like YOLO to me, and in which case it will wash out over the next couple of months and years, I'm sure.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a very good point. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, those were good picks there, Thierry. It's been a busy whole week when you get a 2 billion fund, a 700 million round, and a 1.4 billion deal that, underlying shareholders bid up to be effectively worth even more than they had priced. It's almost like there hasn't been any crisis over the past 3 months, and 30 million having their first unemployment check cut in the US, isn't it?
Yeah, you wouldn't think that. Economy is not it's not in the best shape, and saying that, there were at least half a dozen IPO deals last week as well that we'll get to in a minute, so it's somewhat crazy. Interesting times to live in.
I know, but fair enough. I mean, to be honest, it's not like I'm disappointed by that. To be honest, it's great news that are still keeping the animal spirits high and keeping investing, because the alternative, if people lost their confidence and really trashed the stock market, it would definitely be less fun. So looking out on a blue sunny day with people coughing up 700 million for a new startup on stem cell treatment is definitely a win of a week to me.
It is, yeah.
So what about the other news, Bruce? You mentioned there's a few IPOs, but what about deals? What are the other sort of nibs on that side?
Well, Sonder should in theory be one of the companies that is most affected by the coronavirus, and indeed the short-term apartment rental service reportedly fired or furloughed a third of its staff while selling off some 2,000 properties. But it claims it's back at 80% capacity right now and has secured $170 million in Series E funding from investors, including property developer Lena. The cash was raised at a $1.3 billion valuation, and Sonder aims to add another $30 million before it's closed. Then we have agricultural product and services provider Indigo, which has reportedly added $100 million to a Series F round featuring FedEx, and now stands at $300 million. FedEx backed the first tranche in January, and Indigo, which is valued at $3.5 billion, is set to be targeting $500 million for a final close. The round's other participants include Riverstone Holdings and existing backers Flagship Pioneering and Alaska Permanent Fund, which invests on behalf of the US state. Pioneer Immunotherapies, which is a US-based immuno-oncology developer commercializing research from University of Toronto and UC San Francisco, has secured $275 million from Gilead Sciences, which will acquire a 49.9% stake in Pioneer through the deal. The transaction actually forms part of a larger agreement worth up to $1.47 billion that gives the corporate an exclusive option to purchase the remaining shares for another $315 million and to make potential milestone payments totaling up to $1.15 billion. And it has that option up to the completion of a Phase 1b trial of Pioneer's lead asset. Synchrony Financial and Corporate Venturing Units Mass Mutual Ventures and Blue Venture Fund all contributed to a $100 million round for Payphone, which is a provider of user authentication technology for phone-based customer services. The round nearly doubled Payphone's overall funding, which makes sense considering its technology would feasibly be in greater demand in the wake of increased remote buying during coronavirus-related lockdowns. And Synca, the Southeast Asian fintech provider formerly known as Umais, has bagged $80 million in a Series C round co-led by Siam Commercial's SCB 10X subsidiary. The round included insurer Aio Nissei Dowa, Toyota Financial Services Corporation, Sumitomo Mitsui Banking Corporation and its SMBC Venture Capital Unit. Synca, whose earlier backers also include Synapmas, has built a mobile wallet and a crypto token trading network, and it'll use the Series C cash to widen the range of its products it offers. Optum's corporate venturing unit, Optum Ventures, has led or co-led four rounds in the past week, the latest being a $64 million Series C round for Somatus. The kidney care provider has now secured $105 million in total and will put the cash into geographical expansion and product development. And finally, Ojo Labs, the developer of an AI chatbot for use in real estate deals, has completed a $62.5 million round featuring Royal Bank of Canada and Northwestern Mutual Future Ventures. The company's overall funding now stands at approximately $134 million, and it used part of the latest cash influx to buy online real estate portal Movoto, in a deal that allowed another corporate, property developer Mitsui Fudosa, to exit. Funds, we've got a few interesting ones here as well. The Netherlands-based healthcare-focused VC firm Biogeneration Ventures has closed its fourth fund at $119 million from LPs, including Bristol-Myers Squibb. The corporate and fellow existing backers Schroeder Advec and European Investment Fund joined newly minted LPs, including Industriens Pension and KfW Capital, in contributing to the oversubscribed BGV4. Those latter two are owned by the Danish and German government, respectively, of course. US-based talent agency Creative Artists Agency, or CAA, formed an investment vehicle with venture capital firm New Enterprise Associates, or NEA, that was launched with $100 million in capital, according to The Hollywood Reporter, which is not a publication we get to cite often on this podcast. Connect Ventures will leverage the existing relationships CAA has in the sports and entertainment industries, and The Hollywood Reporter stated that the companies plan to invest up to $400 million through the venture. Material Impact, a US-based VC firm with a keen interest in spin-outs, has closed its second fund at $200 million with LPs including the endowments of Harvard and Princeton universities. Material Impact was founded in 2015 to invest in material science technologies and has backed more than half a dozen university spin-outs to date through its first $110 million fund. And UK-based VC firm Epidaurix Capital has closed a fund of more than $127 million to invest in life sciences companies, including spin-outs across the UK. The capital was supplied by the universities of Aberdeen, Edinburgh, Glasgow and Manchester, as well as the government-owned British Business Bank, which made a $62 million cornerstone investment through its Enterprise Capital Funds programme and pension scheme Strathclyde Pension Fund. There's also a range of undisclosed international backers that have put money into the fund. Exits then, looking at some of the IPOs from last week, one of the largest IPOs is set to be Agora, a Chinese provider of video engagement technology for app developers. The SIG-backed company has floated on Friday in, well, at the time of recording, is expected to be a $350 million IPO, that values it at $2 billion, while three existing investors are pumping in a further $130 million in the form of a private placement. The most interesting thing here is that while Agora's sales have jumped this year, its Q1 revenue is still below $40 million, which implies that while losses may not be a huge factor in successful flotation, revenue may not be either. Forma Therapeutics went public on the same day as Celgene Switzerland and Bristol-Myers Squibb-backed precision cancer drug developer Repare Therapeutics in its $253 million listing. And like Repare, Forma has closed an upsized IPO, having raised a total of $319 million. The price of the Novartis and Eli Lilly-backed company's shares have more than doubled since, indicating the current IPO gold rush really is far from over. And China-based Genetron Holdings, which is working on its own precision cancer treatments, has certainly shown the potential in that space. And it's floated in the US in a $256 million initial public offering that involved it adding on 3 million shares and then pricing them 19% above the IPO range. Vican BioCell and Gene Engineering has achieved an exit through the flotation, having invested in Genetron in 2016. Relay Therapeutics, based on research from MIT, UC San Francisco and Brandeis University, has filed for its own IPO and has set an initial target of $200 million. Again, a precision cancer drug developer, it has raised $400 million in a 2018 Series C round, led by a $300 million investment from the SoftBank Vision Fund, and also backed by GV and Alexandria Venture Investments. The trend of late has been for IPO candidates to price their offerings above the range, so this may turn out to be one of Vision Fund's success stories. Right now, it may very well be regretting not putting more money into life sciences deals. Gene therapy developer Poseida Therapeutics has become the next biotech company to get in line to go public and has filed to raise up to $115 million. Novartis provided half the capital in Poseida's last round, a Series C that closed at $150 million nearly a year ago, and has a 14.9% stake pre-IPO. Its other backers include Transposagen Biopharmaceuticals, and the IPO proceeds will fund clinical development of prostate and bone marrow cancer treatments. That isn't, and I can't believe I'm saying this, actually all the IPO stories from the past week. There's also, for example, iTeos. So do head on over to globalcorporateventuring.com and globaluniversityventuring.com to read about the others as well. And finally, people. We've got a couple of people having moved jobs, starting with Netherlands-based agriculture, food and transport conglomerate Louis Dreyfus Company, which has named Max Clegg as head of its newly formed corporate venturing vehicle, LDC Innovation. Clegg joined Louis Dreyfus in 2012 after 5 years at power and industrial equipment producer General Electric's financial services arm, GE Capital. He held two North America-focused roles from its New York office, initially as head of corporate development at mergers and acquisitions, before shifting to head of food innovation in 2019. LDC Innovations has not disclosed its fund size, but will concentrate on food and farming technology developers. And finally, the National Science Foundation, which is an independent federal agency set up by the US government to fund public research, has named Sethuraman Panchanathan as its new director. He was previously the Executive VP and Chief Research and Innovation Officer at Arizona State University, and also recently completed a 6-year term on the National Science Board, which is the body responsible for setting the NSF's policies. As director of the National Science Foundation, Panchanathan will oversee operations and 2,100 staff, including 200 scientists. His appointment is expected to last for the typical 6-year term.
Wonderful. Well, thanks, Thierry, and catch you all next week. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Jim. And if you have any feedback, feel free to email me. You can reach me at thelus@globaluniversityventuring.com. That's thelus@globaluniversityventuring.com. You can reach Jim at jmawson@mawsonia.com. That's jmawson@mawsonia.com. You can also leave us a review on iTunes, SoundCloud, and don't forget to recommend us to your friends and colleagues if you do feel so inclined. Thank you very much to those of you that have already done so. With that, we wish you a productive week, and we'll be back with you next week. Goodbye.
Global Venturing Review was produced by In Ear Production. You can find out more by going to inearproduction.com.